yes, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stared by the flash of a neon light. Split the night and catch the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share.
To talk with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, there will be no silence this hour because we're going to take your phone calls with our guest, Jonathan Zapp, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Jonathan Zapp, our guest, and, of course, your phone calls as well. Jonathan, what's on tap for you next? What do you keep doing?
Well, right now I'm working on a major study of the Tolkien mythology. In fact, I've posted the unfinished version on the website. It's called Casting Precious into the Cracks of Doom. And I really want to get the messages out there to the people of what's going on in the Tolkien mythology, because it has so much to say about that incredible turning point that we're at right now, that the Maya recognized and that we all feel in our bones.
Well, J.R. was a genius, wasn't he?
He certainly was.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Well, welcome. Where are you calling from?
This is Steve from Lower Lake in California.
Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Well, I am a dinosaur fanatic, and I am convinced that the dinosaurs were the crown of creation. And it is only through a terrible misfortune about 65 million years ago that the dinosaurs did not remain the dominant life form on this planet and develop into technological beings. In fact, I think that our planet is unusual, probably among the billions of planets that are probably inhabited by advanced life forms, and that the A-team was wiped out. And so we, the B team, the mammals, got our chance.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
Because, you know, dinosaurs and mammals evolved at roughly the same time, about 225 million years ago, and the dinosaurs completely dominated the mammals. And if they were reptiles, obviously they could not have done that. The dinosaurs were avian. And we still have dinosaurs alive today. We just call them birds. And I just wondered what Jonathan might have to say about this. I feel that the dinosaurs were at perhaps a few hundred thousand years away, or at most a few million years away, from developing into technological creatures, because they had binocular vision, they were bipedal, they had opposable thumbs, and they were really showing signs of, you know, like the early hominids of many, many, many tens of millions of years later.
Interesting there. Jonathan, you want to comment on that?
Well, that is very interesting. I mean, that genetic experiment may have continued on other planets. We can only speculate. You know, the discoverers of DNA, something that we share with the dinosaurs, Crick and Watson, their only way of explaining its complexity and that it doesn't even start to work until it's reached an extremely high level of complexity was a theory they had called panspermia. They theorized it had to have come from outer space. And if that's the case, then on some other planet, we might get to see the continuation of that very timeline that you're talking about and find a world where that form of life did get to continue, and maybe then we'll find out if they really are the A-Team.
Oh, God, I hope so. Okay. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Love your show.
Appreciate you being part of the program. The archetypes that you talked about earlier in the program, again, Jung also was working in that arena, wasn't he?
Yes. Though the concept of the archetypes goes way back to even a Jewish philosopher, Philo Judaeus, who was a contemporary of Christ. Plato recognized something very like the archetypes. But Jung, I think, put them into a more comprehensive, systematic understanding than anyone else before him had ever done.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast around with Jonathan Zapp. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Susan, and I'm calling from Willow, Alaska.
Alaska. Go ahead,
Hi.
Susan. Hi.
I wanted to ask Jonathan what he was talking about, the spiral of lights that the northern, the Aurora Borealis does, because I saw the Aurora Borealis do a spiral of lights in 2003, and it was just the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And I saw it do a series of geometric images, and they went right in front of me, and it was just awesome. And so I'm always listening to hear what people have to say about the Northern Lights, because I can't find anyone that has ever seen this.
Well, you are so much luckier than I am, because even though I lived in Canada for a little bit, I never got to see those Northern Lights. I've always wanted to. But, you know, one of the things, you're obviously describing an experience that for you was very numinous. And this is something that Jung pointed out in his book on flying saucers, is that things that we see in the heavens are things that we will tend to have divine projections on. And though we have projections on them, it doesn't mean that they're not magical and they're not significant, but there's another layer, which is that we look toward the heavens to see something divine. And the Aurora Borealis, from all reports, fits that bill, especially because it's a type of plasma, from what I understand. So it's kind of in that between and betwixt place. It's hovering right at that cusp between the spirit world and the material world. It's this ever-shifting energy and something that you, like a rainbow, that you can't quite catch hold of.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right, Susan, thank you. Appreciate you being part of the program. You're almost like a philosopher yourself, Jonathan. You know that?
Well, I try to be. It's philosophy just really means that you're thinking about things and trying to understand how they work, and that you're also willing to be a generalist. We live in a time of narrow expertise, and I encourage people to be generalists, and just because we tend to defer and think, well, some experts probably thought about this more than I have, that's a way we shut ourselves down. And I think a good philosopher is a generalist that's willing to look at something with beginner's mind and as if nobody else has ever thought about it before.
Is it true when you interpret dreams, if somebody gets killed in one's dream, they say that they're going to die in real life? Is that true?
Well, no. That might sometimes happen, but I certainly have had people tell me dreams where they've died. A good thing to keep in mind with any sort of dream is that any book or system that says one-to-one, if you dream about this, it means that. Jung called those the dirty little dream books. Every dream is different, and you have to approach dreams with a beginner's mind. They are, in my opinion, real-life experiences, the other side of our incarnation, and it's important not to be formulaic in our approach to them.
The aspect of dreams, have you ever come across anybody who had the ability to dream into someone else's dream?
Yes, I have.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is. This is something that everybody who's worked with dreams noticed. Freud and Jung certainly noticed it, how telepathic they were. When we're dreaming, we're no longer in our physical bodies, which is where there is more of that firewall that separates us from others. Dreams are boundary dissolving. We're in an energy body, and we are therefore more interpenetrated by that field of information and by other dreaming psyches. And so indeed, people have had shared dreams and have told me about that, and there are pretty well documented cases. Myself, I had one experience. I was sleeping in a cave near Taos, New Mexico with some friends, and when I awoke and my friend awoke, we had both dreamed about cats fighting. There were no cats present, so that seemed like a possible instance of a telepathic dream sharing. Not a very exciting example of it.
Next up. Who is up? Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Good morning to
your guest. This is Will from Chicago.
Hello, Will. How are you?
You know, I'm listening, and I'm getting a lot of pleasure from this. I've read the Bible and other books that have stated about an event such as this that he's predicting, and I have my take on it. And my take of the end times, it literally means, I think the end times is an incomplete statement. It's the end of time as we know it. I don't think that time will ever completely stop and be no more. I think what is being talked about and what it really means is it will be the end of a rulership of those who are ruling at the time. And we will go on from there. I think those who will be ruling at that time are going to be so evil and have done so much evil, because your guest said that people of today have killed more things than any other group of people that have ever inhabited the earth. And I think it's going to become so, so terrible until the creator of this will come back and reclaim his creation. That's my take on the end times. But what I would like to know is, since you constantly say about the Mayan calendar, but is that the calendar that you're using to say that this will happen in 2011? Or are you using the Greek calendar, or are you using another method on predicting 2011, whenever you say?
That's a couple of very interesting points, and I personally don't attach to timelines, though if there was any that I would attach to, it would be the galactic alignment, which again, we are roughly in right now. But I also want to thank you for mentioning something that I forgot to mention and that is extremely significant in this whole question. And you are absolutely right. The end of time is not when time runs out. John Jenkins says the 2012 is not the end of time, but the center of time. It is a point where part of the darkness that we've descended into is the blindness of linear time. And 2012 is related to those spiritual epiphanies, or what happened to the dreamer who, the war veteran who was taken up into a vortex by a white crow. It is a place where that many mystics have experienced, where they are outside of linear time and able to experience time in a far richer and more encompassing way. It is the end of time for certain ego and patriarchal structures, as you suggest. It is the probably an end time of the old rulership, as you put it. And that is what's likely to end, and those are the kinds of people who identify with that are the most nervous.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning. Good. This is Joel from Bluebell.
Bluebell is in Pennsylvania.
Yes, we are.
It's the only Bluebell I know. Go ahead, Joel.
Hey, guys. It's a fascinating subject and a great drama, but could the people from the past, like in the Mayan times, have reached into a dream area and projected forward to us the things we need to know by learning the way you are, Mr. Zapp?
Well, they could have, and you know, we have only such a very fragmentary record left of what they discovered. When you go down to the tropics and you look at the ruins, one of the things that you see, and there are, you know, huge mountains where you can see that stuff hasn't even been uncovered, is that the tropics is a rough place to put ancient ruins. The vegetation comes in there and starts ripping the stone apart. And so if they left secrets for how to live, a lot of it may have been lost. But there are a lot of ancient resources that are left to us. I especially am influenced by the Chinese Book of Changes, the I Ching. And I think if you look into that, you will find that it has every answer you could possibly want as to how to live a healthy and effective human life.
Very good. Thank you, Joel, for that call. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Good morning, George. How you doing?
Fine. Thank you.
Huge honor to talk to you. I just wanted to get Mr. Zapp's take on the end-of-time predictions in Michael Drosnin's Bible Code series.
Jonathan, can you react to that?
I recently heard the person who's written the books about the Bible Code, and he had some extremely intriguing things to say. I've also heard other guests on Coast to Coast that were rather convincing in their criticism of the Bible Code, because it's based on you really need like one version of the Bible for it to really be reliably working, and there is no one absolutely typographically consistent version of the Bible. There are numerous Bibles, and they vary slightly. You know, the Torah, for example, which is where the Bible Code is supposed to find its greatest strength, was copied over by hand, and there are tiny variations between versions of it. But one tiny variation would throw the whole thing off. Now, I'm not debunking it. I'm wondering, I would like to know what the Bible Code says, and apparently in the most recent book, or he's going to be coming out with a new book very soon, he's going to be getting into some more of the predictions of what it has to say. I think it's quite intriguing, but it's outside of my expertise.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Next up, west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, this is Philip. I'm trucking through Arizona.
All right. Hi, Philip.
Hey, what I want to know is your guest thought of as far as prophecies and the end times of Nostradamus.
Well, Nostradamus was a true visionary, and Jung took him quite seriously. I think he was a real spiritual genius. But we also have to acknowledge that there has been a disconfirmation with Nostradamus, which was the king of terror coming from the sky in 1999. And I think John Hogue is a great Nostradamus scholar, but he was kind of left holding the bag, and he variously tried to say that it was global warming for a while. For a while, he was trying to compare it to Y2K. That was sort of another disconfirmation experience. Then he said it was global warming and terrorism. I think that we have to acknowledge that Nostradamus didn't quite hit the mark with that one. And you have to remember that he wrote 10 enormous volumes filled in archaic French, a French that was not even contemporary with the time when the books were published, and with all kinds of weird sort of nonsensical statements. Now, if you have 10 volumes of that kind of stuff, and now after the fact want to try and make things fit with events that have already occurred, because so far that's, you know, what they mostly do with Nostradamus. After something occurs, they say, well, Hister sounds like Hitler, but it's actually a river or something like that. So he may have seen things very accurately from where he was standing in time, but things may have deviated from the timeline from where he was standing.
I see.
Okay, thanks, Phil. You're welcome. You're welcome indeed. You know, Jonathan, what I find fascinating, too, is so many people of prophetic nature, the Youngs, the Caseys, Nostradamus, it just continues all the way. And there are a lot of similarities in some of their prophecies, a lot.
Absolutely. And that's where it gets interesting, is you have to kind of triangulate. If you are totally committed to one prophetic tradition or to one prophet, that's where you can really be deceived. But if you look at what they are all saying, then you start to strip the noise away from the signal, and then you start to find something that, correctly interpreted, you really can trust as at least an accurate representation of what is bubbling up from the collective unconscious, and that is extremely significant.
I think so, too. Jonathan Zapp's website is alignment2012.com, ALIGNMENT2012.com. He has two DVDs available, Looking Toward the Event Horizon and Prophecy and the End of Time. Those are both available to you. And the link up to his website is right there now at coast2coastam.com, where we get well over close to 3 million hits a week now, I'm told. Can you believe that? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll wrap up with more of your phone calls. I'm George Norrie.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com.
If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
George Norrie, call the wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
On our next Coast to Coast program, Thieves of the Temple. What's going on with the privately owned banking cartel known to all of us as the Federal Reserve? I'm looking forward to this. We're going to go deep into what's happening there. How would you like to get the After Dark CD? That's right, a double CD, bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, classic ghost stories available for you for now, a limited time. Go to AfterDarkCD.com. That's a website, AfterDarkCD.com, or call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331, 1-800-598-2331. Jonathan, earlier we talked about these mind parasites. Tell us a little bit more about these critters.
Well, this is an enormous topic in itself, but I think this is one of the hugest players in what's going on with human evolution. A lot of people don't realize that the parasites in the regular biological world that we know for sure is out there outnumber all other species, all other types of organisms, 3-to-1, 4-to-1, and they have had a huge part to play in our evolution. I'm just talking about the regular ones right now. For example, some biologists at Oxford believe that sexual differentiation, as compared to organisms producing asexually, came into being as a defense from parasites in order to stay ahead of them in terms of evolutionary adaptation. And, you know, you have a lot of cryptozoologists who come in your show.
Oh, sure.
It's a very valid field of investigation because we have a history as a human race of missing vast areas in which life occurs. For example, up until the 1600s, when the microscope was discovered by a shopkeeper, was invented, no culture had any idea of the whole microbiological world. And if we were to tell people that, you know, well, your body is actually made up of 20 trillion little individual cells, I mean, you would have been burned as a witch or a heretic or thought to be a crazy person at the very least. And we have a blind spot in our culture that is not shared by any other culture, and that is a blind spot toward energetic organisms, organisms occurring on the energetic plane. And, you know, there are three classic biological relationships, symbiosis, predation, and parasitism. They're relationships of energetic transaction. And parasites, which are the most common form of life, in fact, it's said that every living thing has at least one parasite, and higher forms of life, like human beings, usually have many. And many parasites themselves have parasites, and some of those parasites, in turn, have parasites themselves. Parasites are looking for the richest deposit of energy. Now, if there are parasites out on the energetic plane, they would know that the richest deposit of energy is human energy, human sexual chi, and human psychic energy. That is what is creating the dominant force in this world. And I have seen much evidence, and a lot of it came through people reporting to me these classic nighttime attacks, which I've also heard described on your show, George.
Yes.
And these attacks, what's striking is that they're almost completely lacking in psychological content. They don't seem to be conventional nightmares. They have so many features in common. And, you know, a culture is always in trouble when it ignores human testimony. That's what we discovered with child abuse that was ignored for so long. These attacks mean something. I've had my own personal experiences, which people can read about on the website, an essay called Mind Parasites, Energy Parasites, and Vampires. I talk about it at length on the DVDs. But I think that this is a major player, and a lot of the unexpected evils that occur, you know, things like the Columbine Massacre, there may be a mind-parasite connection there. There may be energetic organisms that are able to harvest some of our more negative emotions, and that may be playing a huge role in our evolution, just as we know on the microbiological plane that parasites have a huge role to play in our evolution and in history. And one of the things that may happen as we approach the event horizon is we may start to awaken to the reality that these energetic parasites are out there and they're affecting us. You know, if you look at Chinese medicine, there are some like 500 points of energy that are identified by acupuncture and so forth. Well, they identified some 30 or so points that have a certain prefix that means that they're points where disincarnate spirits can draw energy from our bodies. Ayurveda, the traditional medicine of India that has gained great credit, just like acupuncture has, for its incredibly valuable and accurate principles, the study of these kind of parasitic organisms was on a par with gynecology. It's been recognized by every single culture except modern Western scientific culture that is still caught in a kind of fundamentalist materialism.
All right, let's go to the phones again. Let's pick it up by going to our wild card line. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi, this is Brad from Columbus.
Hello, Brad. Go ahead.
On the cell phone, can you hear me okay?
Sure thing.
Well, first of all, thanks for taking my call, George and Jonathan.
You're welcome.
As I'm listening, I'm a Christian, and I got a pretty good biblical background. Don't have a Bible in front of me, but there's a couple things I wanted to see if you could just like comment on. first this fall. As far as where the Mayans may have gotten their knowledge, you've probably heard of the book. It's not in the Bible. It's called the Book of Enoch. Mm-hmm. And the Watchers. You know, that there's some that believe that bad angels or disobedient angels who fell desired human women, because technically all angels are male. If you take that straight out of the Bible, and you know, women came out of man, out of Adam. Eve came out of Adam. That they desired him so much that they chose to leave those positions and domain, and I guess I'm assuming take on human flesh. And then right after that, that's Genesis 6, that you know, God brought about the flood, and there the attempt was to pollute the gene pool, or genetic lineage from Christ from Adam to Christ. And Noah was not his gene pool had not been corrupted. So the one thing that says the Watchers did is they shared the secrets of the constellations. They showed how actually to do abortions, how to defile the embryo in the womb. And I just kind of wanted to ask if you've heard about that, your reaction or your thoughts on that. And the second thing is the period we live in, I believe that you're calling it the event horizon. I believe that's right around the corner, but I think that is a result of the rapture of the church from the earth. I don't know if you're familiar with the Left Behind series, that when the Bible clearly says it, when, if you believe in the rapture, when it comes, that, you know, God's going to send the people on the earth, you know, spirit of delusion. I mean, not all of them, of course, but, you know, we're talking about RFID, the mark of the beast, that type of thing. So just kind of, do you kind of run through a checklist of maybe, you know, could this biblical perspective and, you know, the energy-sucking spirits you were just referring to, I would consider, well, they're just demons. Can I get your take on that?
Absolutely. What are described about the bad angels that you refer to is something that turns up in the description of mind parasites everywhere and in the personal encounters that I've had and that people have brought to me. And it was their desire to sleep with the women. There is a sexual agenda. This is one of the greatest characteristics, is that they want to feed on people that have a lot of sexual chi. For this reason, young, attractive people are the most likely to be attacked on the streets by human parasites and predators. They are also the most likely to be attacked in these nocturnal energy attacks. And so that's a very characteristic. We also hear about spirits in every culture, that they're jealous of those who have bodies. And they want to break into some of the riches that come with having a physical body. The theme of genetic manipulation that you talk about is absolutely attached to the singularity archetype. We certainly hear about it with people who have close encounter experiences. The movie that I talked about, Village of the Damned, that got me started on this, and that Jung commented on the novel it was based on, that was all about genetic manipulation. UFOs appear, and in a circular area in different parts of the planet, everybody falls asleep. When they wake up from that, all the women of childbearing age are pregnant with children of a racial type never before known. There's a picture on the website. As far as the rapture is concerned, I think it is a vision of the singularity archetype, but I would, you know, it is pretty much extra-biblical. It really dates back to the 19th century. It's mostly a modern conception that there's one sentence and one letter in part of the New Testament that, you know, this is taken off from. And I would just emphasize once again all the disconfirmations that many different Christian sects have had to endure over the last 2,000 years in trying to predict when this would come. And I would also caution about the projection that can occur, where you have an end-time event and where the ego also has the satisfaction of thinking that the kind of people who are not part of my sect and the kind of people I might not agree with or might not like, those are left behind to deal with the Antichrist. Well, we can see a possible ego projection happening there, and I would caution about that. But even with that, there's an element of truth in that the idea, if we were to take it one step of metaphor away, is that those who are vibrating on a higher level, those who are closer to the spirit and a little bit further from the body, may be the ones that successfully survive the great shock or the great perturbation that may come. And it may not have to do with what church they're part of. It might have more to do with how they've lived their life and what kind of energy they've had.
Let's go up next to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is John from San Francisco.
Hi, John.
I'd like to make a quick statement and then ask a question of your guest, Mr. Zapp.
Please, go ahead.
In 1999, I was listening to your program, and they were interviewing a Father Charles Moore, and he was talking about consumption of the white powder of gold and giving like a lifespan of 100,000, 200,000 years. And my question is, if some beings had taken this, could they not be in a position to manipulate events to where prophecies of the Bible are to come true?
Okay. Well, the white powder of gold is a very interesting subject. There's another guest, I can't think of his name right now.
Lawrence Gardner.
Exactly. And he has done extraordinary work on some of these substances that I would call psychoid objects. Psychoid objects are objects that are in that between and betwixt place between matter and spirit. And as we turn that corner in the great cycle of ages, that this is what, you know, 2012 is about, we should expect to see more and more psychoid objects, like you see in the Tolkien mythology, like the sword Sting that is sort of imbued with spirit and it's aware of orc's approach and this type of thing. This is an example of a psychoid object, and white powder gold is a psychoid substance. And as we move, turn the corner from the densification of the Iron Age, we will start to see matter more and more imbued with spirit. And that's exactly what we do see. We've moved from the iron locomotives of earlier in the Industrial Age to now the computer screen that I see in front of me, where I go to Google like I would a Palantir, and whatever I'm obsessed with, I can make it appear on that screen. Mm-hmm. That computer screen is just about a psychoid object at that point, functionally. And so you asked about whether people who have taken that can change prophecy. And what I would say is, just to take that one step of metaphor away, is that those people who are more imbued with the spirit and have that certain power that we see certain powerful figures have, in a negative way a Hitler, in a positive way an intensely charismatic person, regardless of what you think of his politics, Bill Clinton, for example, or a great cultural figure, a Jimi Hendrix, these people are able to shift prophecy around them because they create a break in the pattern. There's beautiful descriptions of this in the Wheel of Time fantasy books by Robert Jordan that understand this on a mythological level. Some people really do shift the great pattern because of their immense personal power.
Okay, and do you have a phone number? If you could give that out, I'd appreciate it. I've been listening, no phone number at all was given out.
Do you give out a phone number on the air? You mean for his DVDs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you probably don't need a phone number for that. You can order them from the website with PayPal or by sending a check or money order to the address that's given on the website.
Okay, he doesn't have a computer, Jonathan. So.
Okay. Well, if you get to the library, I don't want to give out my phone number over the air.
I don't blame you.
But if you get to the library, the librarians are happy to assist you if you're not computer literate, and you'll find all the contact information you need right there.
Okay, we'll try that. Next up, first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Mike. I'm from La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Hello, Mike. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, I'd like to say hi to Mr. Zapp there, too. I've studied a lot about prophecy, especially biblical prophecy. And I believe, you know, 2012 isn't going to be the end time, as it says in Revelation, but I believe it's going to be a new beginning, and we're going to start seeing a lot of major changes, probably even fitting under biblical prophecy. But here's my question. I've heard from somebody that the Mayans were believed to come from the lost continent of Atlantis. And I know the Mayan calendar. I'm wondering if the Atlanteans had one that predated the Mayan calendar and what their thought or what they would expect it, which would be based on end time of what they figured would happen.
Well, we don't have too many reliable records of Atlantis. We have observers like Plato, who
have told us that there was an Atlantis and so forth. However, according to the perennial philosophy in the cycle of ages, Atlantis was happening in at least a silver age, possibly a gold age, an age where there was more spiritual light available. And what that meant was that their technology, their way of doing things, was closer to what we might consider magic. These are just different ways of saying an efficacious system. But they would have used more of the inner magic of the psyche, which is what we see in the Tolkien story. We see that instead of relying on tanks and on gross amounts of physical force, that a single individual, a Gandalf, for example, who has great psychic power, is able to shift the pattern around him, as we just talked about. And so this is something that we might associate with Atlantis, which in the Tolkien mythology, Tolkien very consciously paralleled to the Age of Numenor, which it was reached its height long before the Lord of the Rings part of the story takes place.
Hmm. Yeah, because I was kind of wondering if the Atlanteans had anything based on end times themselves, because like you were saying, they were a very advanced society.
Yeah, I wish I knew, and I wish we had more archaeological proof. Maybe that's one of the things that will create some novelty and change. I mean, right now it's still in the realm of legend and mythos, and I'm really looking forward, if it happens, to some more hard archaeological evidence, any type of artifacts left, so that we could find out more about what the Atlanteans, if any, believed about the end times.
One of my favorite subjects, just what may have happened some 30,000 years ago, Jonathan. So I kind of wish I was in a time machine. Don't you sometimes?
Absolutely. Well, you enter a time machine every single night, George, and we all do. It's called the dream time. In the dream time, we're outside of linear time. That's why in just a typical dream, you might be in the house that you lived in as a child, but you're at your present age. Time folds in dreams. And so, just as Russell Targ points out about remote viewing, it's as easy to see the past or the future as the present. We have a time machine called the human psyche. And when we become more detached from our physical bodies and are in one of those rarefied states, we can use that time machine.
Indeed. Jonathan, thanks for being on the program. It went by very fast, brutally fast.
It sure did. I'm so grateful for the opportunity, George. Thank you.
It's Jonathan Zapp. Prophecy, End Times 2012. I'll see you in our next edition. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonad, Sean Laudasur, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Be safe, everyone.